Extravaganza.
Hello and welcome back to the Horror Pop Extravaganza, where the macabre meets the mindful. This is episode 21. I am Pops Ghostly, and with me as always is
Harry Ham Wallet.
Harry Ham Wallet.
Yeah, buddy. You can make a deposit anytime you want.
And I'm 21 now.
Look, 21. Anything goes.
Anything goes when you're 21. Consensual anything goes, people. Consensual anything goes. Dude, but we got a lot of talk about
Harry Ham Wallet. Everything's consensual.
Hey, hammy. I actually now want to draw just a traditional wallet made of ham with just little pubis hairs. Little billfold hanging out the top.
A little mustard squeezing out the end.
Yeah. We are here to talk about disgusting foods today.
Yes, we are.
Disgusting foods. If you tuned in last week, you know, for episode 21, we wanted to bring the doubleheader for Fright Night. This is our second outing into 80s vampire.
Vamping sexy.
And I cannot believe all the times we've talked about soundtracks that I forgot how fucking good this one is. I had the CD. I used to listen to it all the time. I have a t-shirt that I meant to wear for this episode from Tim Capullo that says, "I still believe." And he's just sexy as fuck with his saxophone on it. It's glorious. I got an autograph. He was like, "Send me $50 and I'll send you a bunch of shit." I was like, "Dude, I'll send you fucking $500. I don't care." Just a whole CD, a whole from maybe 4 years ago CD of him doing a bunch of songs and shit on his saxophone. It's great.
That's beautiful. If you paid for that guy's cocaine for the weekend.
Right? Oh, I still need blow. Do, 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 do. If you don't know what we are talking about already, of course, it is 1987's The Lost Boys. So this came 2 years after Fright Night. I would argue this is Joel Schumacher's best movie.
Oh, that's tough, dude, because Falling Down's so good. But
it is good, but
I'm going to say this one. Yeah. Far and away. You got it.
Falling Down, could we squeeze that in as a horror movie?
Because almost.
That is, all it is, like, that's the real life horror.
Yeah.
You go nuts on the side of the highway. You haven't been going to work for a while. And yeah.
Just talking about remakes, that's ripe for a remake right now, dude.
That would be a good one.
Yeah.
But it's like, I feel like we've seen some of it in shit like Assassination Nation. And there was that other one with the little girl and the guy that killed a bunch of Kardashian-like celebrities. So it was more in response to the social media age, not necessarily sitting in traffic for 10 hours at a time. But the idea was the same. Like, I'm just going to murder everything.
Yeah.
Like, I'm broke. My head broke. But that's not what we're talking about today. We are here to talk about 1987's The Lost Boys. And this, boy, you talk about a cast, you talk about a soundtrack, talk about a director, writer, all of it. Put it out there, Ham Wallet, because we need to dive right into this thing.
The Lost Boys from 1987 is rated R and it's 1 hour and 37 minutes. And you know what? I just want to say, movies need to be shorter.
Yeah, we need to go back to that. The problem is, if you're going to throw $100 million at something, they wanted to, you know, be an epic. Everything's got to be an epic or part of a huge story, where this at the time wasn't, you know, it's spawned some sequels like we'd mentioned last week with The Crow. And when we were talking about all that at the end, they're like, "What the fuck, The Crow? You didn't do a whole episode on the Crow." So
yet, people,
this
yet.
Did right. This did spawn some sequels, some comic books that were pretty fun. I read a lot of the comic books that followed this, where the Sax Man became a vampire hunter with the Frog Brothers.
Yeah,
or something like that. Yeah, it was cool. But this in 87, man, just go ahead. Go
this
ahead,
was, this was hot Take fire, it. Dude. Like, when this movie came out, people were excited for it, you know? And that's what was great about the 80s, too, is that a movie came out and you had time to be excited about it. You had time to want to rewatch it, you know? You couldn't wait for it to come out on video a year and a half later.
Right? That's the truth. Or you'd go to the theater a couple, like you said, a couple times and check it out.
I saw The Crow 5 times in the theater.
You lucky dog.
Yeah.
bought a few, but not five. I know I didn't get to see it five.
Five times. And one time I was turned away because I wasn't 18. And I said, I've seen this motherfucker four times. And you told me I can't get in?
Dude, I just had an idea.
Yeah.
What if we start a nonprofit movie theater that houses, like, I don't want to say homeless people, but like a shelter for the night. And then we just run old movies all day and sit up in the projection booth and watch them on the big screen and just let the hobos.
It would just be for us. And it would just be, yeah.
Oh, we'll give them popcorn and stuff in a place that, you know, instead of traditional chairs and stuff, you maybe have a couple recliners. Like, we can house 50 people. Come here and take a nap, but you got to take a nap when the movie's.
Dude, that is the first time I saw The Crow, dude, was opening weekend, and it was me and a hobo, dude. And he was sleeping through the whole thing. And he started snoring. Like, that was it.
We're in the projection booth. We don't have to be down there listening to the snore.
All right.
We can listen through a speaker, but where you're providing a service at the same time, and somebody will be laying there awake like, fuck yeah, The Crow, dude, I love this fucking movie way back when, because we won't be showing dumb shit, you know. And it being a nonprofit, hopefully we could go to the studios and be like, hey, let us show a print or whatever, you know. We're a nonprofit for hobos, for a shelter, movie shelter, the movie,
yeah,
shelter.
Yeah, let's put that business degree to work there, Pops.
All right, go ahead and give us the cast and how this thing got made.
All right, this movie stars Sleepers, Jason Patrick.
Sleepers. Oh, I saw that in the theater.
Oof, that's a tough one.
It was. I was not prepared. I was not prepared for Sleepers at the movie theater.
The person that lived through Sleepers, Corey Haim.
Oh. Haim, Corey.
The Coreys. We love you, buddy. I saw License to Drive, and I was like, these guys are so cool, man. I hope they have a fun time hanging out. They weren't having a fun time hanging out.
They were doing cocaine.
Yeah.
At 12 years old with Drew Barrymore in the VIP room at the whiskey.
I don't know. That's it's not the life I want, but it's somebody's life.
Right. And all of a sudden, out of the darkness here, what the fuck? That's ignorant. Don't talk about that. That's ignorant. Come on, Corey. That's ignorant.
Let's go back to Neverland and play. Sham on. All right.
Basically, it's the back windows of a van. Like, no.
Terrible, dude.
South Park did it first, so we're okay.
Oh, shit. We got Diane Weist, who's always a great mom.
She is. She's the counterpart to Dee Wallace in the 80s for me.
Totally, dude.
Yeah.
She was Edward Scissorhands' mom. She was fucking
but in Edward Parenthood. Scissorhands.
She was the mom in that to little Lee Phoenix before he came Joaquin.
Oh, talk about tragedy from drugs.
Whew. All right. Bernard Hughes is grandpa. What a fucking champ this guy is.
Slays. Chews scenery up. Slays.
Edward Herman, the bad guy in every 80s movie.
I think it's just he's so big. He's a very imposing presence just being there.
He reminds me of a Herman Munster if he had face skin.
Right. Fred Gwynn, yes.
A guy we've never heard of, Kiefer Sutherland.
So young and pretty.
Dude, so young and pretty and such a fucking badass, dude.
All the time. I worked, quick story. I worked at a Army Navy surplus store right out of high school. Maybe at the end of high school and then like a year or two after high school. My boss was a fucking sweet guitar player. Like, dude could shred. And his brother had moved to LA and gave a lot of celebrities guitar lessons. And he said Sutherland took lessons from him and showed up exactly how you would think, dude. A pack of cigarettes rolled up in his fucking shirt sleeve. And some convertible, like super cool convertible, banging music, you know, and just shows up and is cool. And it's like, yeah, man, let's fucking jam and shit. Like, that's cool that Kiefer's exactly what you think.
Yeah,
you know, Mr. He's had an illustrious career, though. 24 was unreal for or not. Was it 20? Yeah, it was 24 that he did the and done some cool movie stuff, some other cool horror stuff. But at this time, he was very young So beautiful. All these young men are so beautiful. They just glisten.
I mean, just look at his dad, though. I mean, how could you not, you know? But Nepo Baby, fuck that. He's talented as fuck, dude.
Oh, not one. That's, you know, people would be like, oh, Jamie Lee Curtis is a Nepo Baby. And I'm like, no, that's just good stock.
Yeah.
You bred pedigree.
Right.
Good job, Tony Curtis and Janet Leigh. Come on, dude. Yeah. There's something there for sure. But yeah, but they didn't ride that. Probably got a good little boost in the right direction.
The reason this movie drips with sex, Jamie Gertz.
Yeah.
She was everybody's 80s fantasy, dude.
Just miss 80s. Yeah. 100%.
I feel like it's Gertz and Milano, dude.
Oh, Milano. I had a from way back to Who's the Boss. I was like same age as her, you know, like a year younger. And I always just had a crush on Alyssa Milano. Oh,
dude.
See, she's got fear. Fear is when I was like, oh man, like she's now becoming something. And then fucking Charmed went on for, I never really watched Charmed, but I know, again, cool to, now that I'm thinking about it, these people's careers, you know, they've done a lot of cool shit.
Yeah, dude, you forget that like they went on to do lots of stuff.
Lots of cool stuff.
Another no name here, Corey Feldman.
Corey's in the 80s.
This Corey's still with us, dude, which is crazy.
Like I said, last week, he's going to be on a tour with Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, dude.
I might have to go see it.
You should
go see it. This is a place on a hill. It's a hill that leads down to an amphitheater. But if you're on the hill, you could sit there and just smoke weed the whole time because it's legal in the state of Michigan. So you could be outside, go buy some right at the venue or whatever. But just to see Corey Feldman and his band of angels on stage.
Yeah, dude.
Whenever again, I might be able to get a t-shirt.
Hell yeah, dude. Maybe you could pick up one of them mirror jackets, dude, like he wears on stage.
I bet you I could offer him like $1,000 for whatever he's wearing. Be like, bro, give me your t-shirt, please. Let's switch shirts. I won't leave you shirtless, but
maybe you should.
Let's switch clothes. And he's got my like big clothes on, and I'm just like sucked into his tiny little clothes. Here we go. And then we're getting pictures together. I switch clothes with Corey Feldman.
Can you even tell which one is Corey? Oh shit.
Okay, keep going.
Now here we go through all these fucking names, dude, and then
Ellen Sweeters,
the second frog brother, dude. Jameson Newlander. Never heard from him again.
Did they both come back for the tribe? It wasn't the tribe. The tribe is the second one, and then the thirst. They're back for the thirst, right?
They both came back for one of those sequels
that again we just don't really talk about a lot.
Let's talk about this motherfucker, Alex Winter.
Yeah, dude, fucking a Bill and Ted fame.
Hell yeah, dude. Bill S. Preston Esquire.
That's right.
Or is he Ted? No. I don't know.
No, Ted is Theodore. Keanu Reeves is Ted, so yeah, he's Bill.
Yeah, he's Bill, of course. Oh, man, just a cool fucking dude, though. Like, he's been in Hollywood. Like, he's been the man behind the man for a lot of it. But when he gets in front of the camera, oh, man. I even didn't hate that third Bill and Ted movie. It was not great, but I don't hate it.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. But probably just because I feel like whatever Keanu Reeves, there's a little bit of light he brings to whatever he does. There really is, dude. There's something just, and to see him come back and be like, yeah, I'm gonna redo this thing for you that made me famous, like, why not?
Right on, dude. Yeah, we got Todd Fetter. I only mention him because he's listed as surf Nazi number one.
Surf, oh, when they're out, probably the dude with the dark hair with the skunk stripe of white.
Yep, that's the one, dude. I didn't even know they were Nazis.
I didn't either, but I guess that makes it a lot more palatable. I thought they were just like metalheads out there partying.
Yeah, no, they were Nazis. Surf Nazi 1, 2, and 3. And then this thing was written by Joel Schumacher.
Yes.
And it's got several writers on it. We've got Jan Fisher, James Jeremias, and Jeffrey Boehm.
Okay, I didn't know there was that many people on it. I always thought Schumacher wrote it along with directing.
I always think that too, and then I'm like, they didn't.
But this is such a Schumacher movie. We wouldn't learn this until Batman Forever and Batman and Robin.
Right. We had no idea that like the blacklight effects were going to turn into something.
Level, the level of neon and love of big carnival settings, bright lights all over the place, but twinkly lights. Everything's got to be not regular lights. We're not talking about lamps you would have in your house. Nope. Bright fucking lights that twinkle.
Everything has lights on it.
Did you ever, by chance, see the episode of Batman the Animated Series where all the little kids are talking about their encounters with Batman?
Yes, dude.
And one of them's Frank Miller. The other one's maybe Bob Kane.
Yeah.
And then Joel Schumacher comes out with a big fluffy boa and throws it over his shoulder.
Yeah.
That's Batman Forever and Batman and Robin right there. And you see the genesis of that.
Yes.
In The Lost Boys. Because this did so well. They were like, just keep doing your thing.
Yeah.
But yeah. Schumacher. I still say this is best movie.
You're right here what this movie's about.
Yeah.
According to IMDb. This may be one of the shortest we've had. After moving to a new town, two brothers discover that the area is a haven for vampires.
I mean, no.
No, not at all.
Because up until this point in the vampire world, we had seen a little bit of, like, Blackula was sexy. He was smooth. We saw Sarandon as Jerry in Fright Night that we talked about last week, which was pretty smooth. But I feel like in this write-up, it needs to be the sexiest vampires you've ever seen.
There you go. Yeah. And I think this is the first time we had young vampires. Like, these are like teenage vampires. That wasn't really a thing.
Right. And that's where you can bring in. And we get a lot of horror movie references in this thing. We get a Texas Chainsaw reference. We get Schumacher, you know, The Doors, Jim Morrison being this young kind of mystical sex lizard man, whatever. But it's a very attractive movie, but it opens in the best way possible. And yeah, that write-up could be way better. Opens in the best way possible. Just cry, little sister. Going off into nothing land. Open up on the carnival at night after we get this cool. We get a lot of cool shots in this, like helicopter shots, big tracking shots from far away down into a parking lot, chasing people. These chasing people shots, you know, the POV of the vampire, I guess, is what we're seeing.
Right. And they kind of he went off Jaws, basically, because at first he filmed the vampires flying out of the sky and showed them flying. And he was like, maybe we're blowing our load too early and we need to just like cool it back. And so that's where he came up with that idea of like, let's see from the POV of the Predator what it looks like. And I thought that's such a better choice.
It truly is. And from note one, the music in this thing is unbelievably good.
Yeah.
Throughout the entirety, the whole soundtrack was so good. Add it to your playlist wherever you add your music and shit. But the Lost Boy soundtrack, fire across the
song
board.
Still gives me chills, bro. Like today.
Oh, dude. Cry, little sister. Thou shalt not fall. And we'll get to the end of the movie, but that's where I think it's the most effective and just so good.
Yeah.
So we open up at a boardwalk carnival at night. It is bustling with people. We jump onto, which might have been our surf Nazi, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
One of the surf Nazis is on the merry-go-round. David and the boys come around the corner just looking glorious under all these twinkling lights.
Yeah.
Way better than Twilight sparkly vampires. Let them be on that night and be twinkly. They come through, and the one guy goes to touch a girl or something. His homie's like, oh, get the fuck off her. Big bad comes around, security guard, who doesn't look, he's probably sweating his ass off trying to keep up with that merry-go-round, like, fuck. He's a big dude. He's keeping it up with them and says, hey, I told you, you know, no more coming around the boardwalk or whatever. Okay, cool. They take off, pan back out to the sky. We see the boardwalk now fully shutting down, which is very ominous as the roller coaster shuts down. All of the games shut down. Very scary stuff. One car in the whole parking lot, and it's our security guard. Rad shot coming in from way up high in the sky.
Yeah.
Dives in on our boy. We don't see anything happen outside of he was fumbling with his keys in the door, they yank him hard enough that he pulls the whole door off with him, and he's gone. Doom, 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 doom. People are strange. Now we're in Santa Carla. Clearly supposed to be Santa Barbara, California, but they call it Santa Carla. We see there's no, or they're, first they're cruising, and she's cruising. They got the dog. Corey Haim, who I don't know how old he's supposed to be, but they just keep telling him, like, go take your bath, boy.
Yeah.
Make sure you get your sleep. Close the closet, mom.
We grew up fast in the 80s, man. We were like little kids out doing shit, hanging out at a fucking carnival by ourselves at night.
It was crazy. So, but they're driving into town, change the music. We get a cool rendition of the Doors, not the actual Doors song, because I think this works a tiny bit better. It's a little bit more poppy, a little more upbeat,
yeah,
which flows into this cool, young, angsty vampire vibe that we get throughout the entirety of this thing. And what's that smell? Oh, that's the ocean air. Smells like something died. They pass the sign, turn around, and on the other side, somebody had spray painted murder capital of the world. We see a very desolate Santa Carla where people don't have jobs. They're just being weird all over the place, I guess. They get to the house before they go to the boardwalk,
right?
They go find Grandpa on the, he's just laying on the porch. Like, this motherfucker, this is who I want to be in my life. Like, oh, somebody's coming over. I'm going to lay here. Just fucking
he's
relax.
My spirit animal, dude.
I'll meditate till they get here. And then when they get here, like, ah, I'm not dead, but I got you, didn't I? And he's got that voice, a really good little twang to his voice. We learned that recently divorced a year ago, moved from Phoenix, Arizona to Santa Carla, gonna stay with dad. This is her dad, so their grandfather. They're all gonna stay together, and he's got some rules for you. Don't take my Oreos. I feel that too. Like, this dude really is.
Fuck yeah, dude. You don't fuck with a man's Oreos, dude.
And they open up his workshop and like, oh, bro, fuck Texas Chainsaw Massacre for real and shit. They're going to go after chatting with Grandpa. He's going to go off and do something else. They're going to go hang out on the boardwalk for a little bit. We get to the boardwalk. This movie shines in ways that nothing has ever shined before right here. We get Tim Capullo on a stage in front of a full live audience. It's not Creed 3 where the boxing ring is all full. You just see it all over. It's like bad. Full of people that are headbanging to saxophone music, because if there's one thing the 80s had an excessive amount of, saxophone.
Oh, baby, yeah.
Oh, much saxophone. Give me fucking Bruce Springsteen on the phone right now, and we'll talk about some badass saxophone.
If you could fucking play a fucking band instrument in the 80s, you were cool as fuck, dude.
You got him up there with a big junkyard dog chain around his neck.
Yeah.
Big muscles everywhere, purple Hulk pants on, ponytail, just, oh, I still believe. I'll march this road. I'll climb her. I could go all day.
As badass as they make it seem, though, he's still fucking playing for a bunch of kids at a pier. Like, he's not doing good.
Doesn't matter. He's doing good in life. It doesn't matter where he's playing. He could be playing at a retirement home. Those old people would be like, I still believe.
Like, this guy, his day life is not cool.
He's just out on the boardwalk getting quarters, just like, super quiet.
He wakes up in the morning, dude, and he like fiddles around his shag carpet looking for a loose butt, dude, so he can smoke it.
Yeah, I still fucking believe. Dude, no, we can't talk back. We can't talk bad about the sax man.
He's got sand in Michael, his carpet.
Michael sees Star at this point.
Yes.
Immediately.
He's like, I'm going to hit that.
Love that. And Corey Haim is just like, come on, Michael. Like, let's go do some other stuff. And he's like, bro, get the fuck out of here. And he's like, oh, it's that girl, ain't it? Yeah, you're chasing her around. He lands in a comic book shop. His mom is at the video store because she had found a lost child. And is like, hey, I can't. And our big bad shows up and is like, oh, what are you looking for? We got the best selection of videos in Santa Carla. She's like, actually, I'm looking for a job. I'm desperate. He's like, oh, you know, you look like you were good with kids and shit. I can give you a job here at the video store. His intentions immediately are like, I'm going to hook up with that.
Yeah.
I want to be.
Yeah. And he's, I mean, he's got the shoulder pads. He's got the gray suit on, like the linen's gray suit.
Miami Vice. That Miami Vice suit.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. And he owns a video store, which is the fucking hippest joint in town.
Any town in 1987.
If you worked at the video store, dude, you had it in because you could get free videos.
You were Quentin Tarantino, dude.
Fuck yeah, you and were, dude.
We used to get the videos is 2 days before release date, as long as we had it back by release date. So really? I would take every new release from the video store, dude. All, and I'd watch that shit in 2 days. Bing, bang, bang, bang. Found so many great gems. I would, if a video store was a feasible business model, I would love to have a tattoo shop slash fucking video store. Oh, it would be my dream.
Yeah.
My dream. You could just come in there and hang out, have a couple TVs on the walls. You got to watch whatever's on. That's how it goes. And then just find somebody who's passionate about it, that shit, and let them pay them a living wage. Be like, yo, hopefully I can afford to pay you like $20 an hour to hang out here, do all this shit. But then fucking, yeah. Are you smart enough? What's your favorite John Carpenter movie? Talk to me. It would be a long interview process, probably like 3 days.
I feel like it would be really uncomfortable, dude. You're like, you got some dude chained up for 3 days, fucking banging on him about movies.
Why is he chained up?
Because you said for 3 days. How else are you going to keep him there?
I'd give him a nice place to sleep and be like, yo, you sleep in the store and I want you to gain all the knowledge, read all the backs of all the VHSs that are
around.
You're
just like dropping like Taco Bell into the little mail slot so he can like live in there. He crawls from behind the counter.
Get back in there.
I'm gonna give me this motherfucking job.
Have like a giant rodent water feeder full of ghost or monster or some shit where he can come up and be like,
Jesus, this just got dark, dude.
I'll take that job. Who's gonna pay for it?
I'll take that challenge. I'll volunteer for it even after I get the job. Re-up me.
Slink around all night. She gets a job at a video store. He immediately starts talking comics to the Frog Brothers, Edgar and Allen.
Yeah, dude, and I'm not quite sure about his comic knowledge. Like, he says some shit about like Batman 500 or something.
No. The one he does say is a Batman number 14. And he's like, that's a pretty serious book. I got one. And no, you don't, dude. And they didn't have one there either. Not at that time. Not in 87. Somebody had bought that shit up by then. But yeah, you're like, you can't put the Superman 300 with the other one, 98, because red kryptonite wasn't even discovered yet. And they're like, where are you from? Krypton.
No better, Phoenix.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Phoenix, because they do say something about his wardrobe. And they start selling him on horror comics. I don't like horror comics, which clearly he doesn't, because he tells his mom, like, I read a scary comic. He's cool on the streets, but he's a fucking baby in the shade.
There you go. Talking about fucking kids again.
I'm not talking about fucking children. I'm the most anti-fucking children person you will ever meet. He's scared, like, wants his closet door shut and shit. He's going to bed at night. He's like, oh, mom, don't forget to close my closet. Like, he really is scared of some shit.
That's how I was, dude. I loved this shit, but I was scared to death of it. And that's why I haven't seen most of these horror movies.
Which is amazing. But you've seen The Lost Boys. Everybody's seen The Lost Boys.
I still have to keep my closet closed, and I'm 45 years old.
That's good. Keep your ham wallet safe.
I close my kids' closet before they ask, just because I'm like, I don't want them monsters getting you.
Don't want no business with what's going on.
After 9 o'clock, you don't want to know what's going on in that closet.
They're gonna be scarred for life and shit, afraid of the closet.
Why are you closing the closet, Dad? I'm like, so they won't beast won't get you.
You ever heard of the boogeyman? No, get your ass in bed. Okay. Michael ends up connecting with Star, but that's when David shows up and is like, yo, bro, you got to fucking ride with us if you want to. And again, Santa, can I meet you? Are you lost in the shade? That shit is so good. And they're dirt biking through some scary, foggy shit.
Yeah, dude. You don't know that road and you're going that fast? That's some dangerous riding, bro.
I've been there before and it's terrifying. I had nightmares for years after that shit. But this is a really cool effect, too. As they get closer to the edge, he's trying so hard to keep up. Michael on his bike with all of them on dirt bikes. Star's on the back of David's bike. I don't know if we met Laddie yet. Laddie might be on the back of somebody else's bike. Laddie's just a little kid who hangs out with Star. I don't think it's their... I don't want to say he's not her mom, right? Or she's not his mom.
I hope not.
I hope not, too. But the music drops out as we get into this dense fog. And then it's just like really scary because it's just a camera on the front of something like following just a tire. You know, you can't see more than a foot visibility. They get to the edge of this cliff. David dumps his or Michael dumps his bike, jumps up. And he's like, just you, bro. Just me and you. And he's like, nah, come on, let's go hang out. And he's like, all right.
Would you pick a fight with Kiefer looking the way he does, dude? I'd be like,
he punched him the one time. He gets him one, bang, and then, come on, just you. I wouldn't. No, not like that. No. Like, how'd you get white hair?
Yeah, exactly, dude. That's not even blonde. What color is that?
It's not even a real color.
And he has that fucking beard, dude. Like, I couldn't grow a beard that perfect or shave down a beard that perfect. It's just perfect.
I had a beard, well, at least a really full goatee at like 16.
What?
And then the beard by 21, it was like full man beard.
Goddamn, dude. I was like 15 and I had like four super longy stringy hairs that would like tickle my teeth. And my mom would let me shave because she was like, once you start shaving, you got to do it every day.
Just have that weird tickler growing out of your fucking
my
face.
My life was fucked, dude.
Okay. They end up going back to the cave, which is such a good set piece.
So good, dude. How would you keep homeless guys out of there, though? I guess because you're vampires, you eat them, but
those motherfuckers. Jim Morrison posters, wine bottles, fishing nets. The story they tell is something along the lines of when the big earthquake hit San Francisco, this place sunk into the ground and was just abandoned. Because you got to go down a crazy cliffside to get to it. And like you said, they're vampires, but they're hanging out and they're listening to music. Like, hey, bro, get Chinese some food. And he's like, yeah, let's, yeah, this is, I like your house.
Yeah. Everybody had to have a cool fucking hangout in the 80s. That was another thing, dude. And it was because we did. We all like would go out in the forest, like stack up some boards and some branches and shit, make a little fucking playhouse. But it wasn't a playhouse. It was where you looked at porn and you jerked off in the forest.
That's the playhouse. You went there. You made a cool little playhouse. It wasn't a playhouse. You went down there to masturbate with your friends.
It's not a circle jerk if you face away from each other.
Oh, my stomach hurts. They're in the cool cave hangout, and it is super cool. This set design is so good. Again, with the practical effects, super good. David sends one of his cronies to get some food, but I think he just like swoops around the corner and comes back. He's got very some What We Do in the Shadow shit, just like disappears and then shows right back up with a bunch of takeout boxes full of noodles, rice, General Tso's chicken, who knows what they're having. But they're eating all of these noodles and shit. And David, out of nowhere, one of the most iconic scenes in the movie, is like, how's your maggots, Michael? And he looks down and it's just fucking bugs everywhere. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. That's one of the few Funko Pops I have is David with the holding the thing of takeout. And he looks down. He thinks he's eating shit. He's like, what the fuck? And he's like, what are you talking about, bro? It's just fucking noodles. And he looks down. He's like, oh, shit, it is. And he's like, all right, now we're going to have this fucking ritual of drinking this wine. And Star tries for a second to tell him, it's blood.
Don't drink that shit.
Right. Real quiet. That's you got to be like, cool. Don't do it, dummy. Lamont, you dumbass piece of shit. I love Sanford and Son, man. I watch a lot of Sanford and Son. So I know. Deep cuts. Oh. He ends up drinking of the blood, starts having this hallucinatory audio visual dreamy sequence that we see. Things are spinning and cry little sisters going on. That song is so fucking good. And he's going around everywhere. Then they end up riding out to the old iron bridge. Very iconic moment in this movie. They all get out there and see you later, Michael. Woohoo! Yeah, peace out, Michael.
Let go and just fall into the fog. Where did they get so much fog for this movie?
A lot of fog. It was probably just the smog from San Francisco. They pumped it out of the city. Giant hose from the city to the set. They're like, we can't fucking hang. So they are all hanging under the bridge. Train comes over. Michael's hanging on for fucking dear life. Train's going over, shaking everything. They start letting go. Oh! He holds on until his fingers just can't anymore, falls down, and then like gently lands in his bed. Slow motion, some cool shit. He doesn't know at this point what's real, what's not, but does wake up feeling fucked up. Sunglasses in the house. His brother's like, yo, come on, let's go do some shit. And he's like, nah, bro, fuck, feel bad. Feel real bad.
I've been hanging with the bad kids and I'm all fucked up and hungover because I'm a bad older brother.
Me and that sax man ended up in the sack.
I fucked the sax man last night.
He blew my horn, buddy.
Shit got wild. He's like, I met these dude called Frog Brothers at the comic book store, man. My night was way more wholesome.
Right. He's like, but do you still believe? Mom's now working nights. Grandpa's always off doing something. He's fixing the fence. He's going out on a date where he's like, hey, yo, does anything work as aftershave? And he's like, I got some Windex. Perfect. And just spraying shit on himself. So David and the gang don't meet up with Michael again. I think they go back to the boardwalk because they're there at night and he's looking for
Star.
He's trying to find Star to figure out what happened because he knows something's wrong. I don't know if this is when he floats to the ceiling or no, that's when Corey Haim is on the phone with his mom. He's like, ah, fuck, my fucking kids. I'm going to my brother. That doesn't come until a little bit later. So they end up back at the boardwalk. After Haim takes a bath, that's right. That's so weird. Like, you got to take a, you know, he's like,
get in there,
he's
take like, a bath.
I ain't got a soul. Just singing away, which I did want to name any animal I had in a nook for at least 15 years. That was the coolest name for a dog. But his dog's this really cool husky. He's in the bath singing. He's got the radio up super loud, puts his head under the water. Michael comes in, bloodthirsty. Nanook then attacks Michael. Corey Haim gets out like, what'd you do to my dog, bro? What the hell? Nanook wouldn't bite you. This doesn't make any sense. And he's like, he's protecting you. Michael, from you? What the fuck? He runs upstairs. But then that's when he gets a hold of the Frog Brothers somewhere. And he's like, I think my brother is a vampire. They had tried to peddle the horror comics on him more time.
Yeah.
He convinces them. Does he not like daylight? Sunglasses all the time. Does he sleep all day? Yeah, I'll fucking. Oh, he's definitely a blood sucking creature of the night. These two, they're Rambo. They're both little Rambos, but against vampire.
That was a really good Corey impression, by the way.
There's a lot of impressions that live inside this body. There's a lot of them. I could probably do a stand up set for an 3.5 hours.
That'd be amazing.
Just different voices having conversations with different. It's just all my years of having kids, dude. But I also did a lot. I feel like Steve Urkel was probably the first one that I remember doing in front of, like, I can sound like this if I try to sound like this. And I've been in love with it ever since. He ends up back with the Frog Brothers. Hey, I think my brother's a vampire. Hey, take this stuff. This is what you got to do. I'm not going to kill my brother. That can't happen. They end up back at home. Where Michael, I want to say, runs into Star and David, but he takes her away because he's not fully turned. They want to turn him. But either way, Corey Haim and his brother end up home alone. Michael is flying up to the ceiling and like stuck there. He starts getting sucked out the window. Really cool effects done well.
Yeah.
Starts getting sucked out the window. And Sam's like, you're a fucking vampire. I can't help it. Like, what the fuck is going on? This kid's freaking out. Mom is out to dinner with her boss. She's kind of, he's getting very flirty with her. We saw him kick the kids out. He's a strong alpha character. We saw him kick Kiefer and the gang out of the comic book store. I told you, never come around here before. Or again, never come around here before. I like that shit. I need a t-shirt. Never come around here before. You know how many looks you'd get? Like, what the fuck? Anyway. She leaves dinner because Sam's on the phone screaming. Michael's in the background. Sam, help me. She's like, what the fuck is going on? She runs home. They play it off as, I don't know, I read a scary comic.
Right.
Would you believe that from your child who sounded like that on the phone?
No. I'm like, is your brother on drugs again?
Right. That would be my nice
question. No, he's a vampire. Uh-oh.
So he knows and tells Michael that he's got some friends that can help out. They get a hold of the Frog Brothers. Meanwhile, Grandpa's still gallivanting around. Mom does go over with Sam to her boss's house to try and apologize for what happened and gets attacked by his dog. And the thing that gets me is this dog running is good, but when it busts its head right through the gate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm guaranteed it was false something or other. But the fact that you got that dog to do that and still be like all over her. So Thorn, but she's seen this dog at the video store the whole time. It hangs out with him all the time. It's a cool dog, lovable dog. But at this point, it comes after her. They decide to try and make amends. They're going to bring the boss over for dinner with everyone. She wants her kids to meet him and all sit down for dinner. He brings over the Frog Brothers as his guests. I think this, yeah, it's amazing. Edgar and Alan Frog. Such just fucking amazing. He brings them over for dinner and they've got this game plan because they think he's the head vampire. And if you kill the head vampire, then all the other vampires who have been turned under head vampires, said vampire will revert back to normal.
Which is, I hate that. There's two things I hate about vampires that of the lore. And it's that because like, from last week, Amanda Burst, her face is completely fucked up and then she just like isn't a vampire anymore and her skin just goes back to normal and it's not all like fucking stretched out and shit. Looks like a maybe fucking bad stomach tuck surgery.
What about the Wolfman?
The Wolfman's different. Like hair can go back inside you.
It get huge and Incredible Hulk.
Incredible Hulk too. I never bought that his pants stay on. Like he would tear right out of those pants, dude.
Just Hulk dong everywhere.
Hulk dong everywhere, dude. He'd be like, Hulk, smash.
But yes, I know you don't like the vampire lore that states. But anyway, in this movie and through a lot of the 80s, that is what it was.
And it doesn't make sense they don't have a reflection because they're not ghosts.
I don't know. Maybe because they don't have a soul. Maybe your soul. I mean, vampire lore goes back a long fucking way. We would have to dig super deep to figure out where a lot of, because even the shit with the beans or whatever, you can throw it down on the ground and they got to count it all up or whatever.
Is that real? That's not real.
100% real. That's why the count was the way he was on Sesame Street. He would count whatever it was. What? Yeah, it was an obsessive compulsive thing. So that it's they like had
Rain Man? He has to count all the fucking toothpicks.
Exactly. Or like Leprechaun, I got a shiny shoes. So, I forgot what the fuck we were talking.
I don't know. Vampire rules, man.
Oh, yes. They believe that he is the head vampire. So they've devised a bunch of traps to try and get him. Whether that be some holy water, what else?
The garlic in his food.
Reflection. But we get a sequence, again, vampire lore, where he's at the door, the entryway, and says, Michael, I can't come in until invited by the man of the house. You're invited. And he brings him in. They all have dinner. All the little tricks go south and he invites her over for dinner the next night. Let me, you know, bring you over. I'll cook. We'll let Thorn apologize, which is a savage name for a dog. If you're going to have a dog, Thorne.
Yeah.
Like Jim Thorne. Thorne.
Thorne, sick balls.
Right. Exactly. So we now have the Frog Brothers, Michael, and Star are going to attack the cave, believing that David is the head vampire. They're going to go do it during the day. They know that they're sleeping. Star is more concerned about Laddie. She just wants to get Laddie out of there and get Laddie safe. And Michael's just concerned about Star. We'll figure this out, but us three, we got to get Laddie in order for this to work. So they go into the cave. It's super cool. Don't see any vampire. Where are the coffins? Where are the coffins? And they shine their flashlights up, and this whole place is a coffin. They shine their flashlights up, and everybody's hanging upside down. Super cool. They were all really hanging. It doesn't look like an effect whatsoever.
Right.
They end up stabbing Alex Winters, takes the first stake through the heart, and his scream awakens. Again, though, if you buy into the hive mind lore, they're all connected. It's like a piece of them actually died.
Right.
They feel the death of their counterpart. They all wake up really scary. Big fangs, yeah. Sweaty and greasy, terrifying eyes, the whole vampire, but not super distorted quite yet.
Right.
We do get some of that later, but not a lot of prosthetics on the face, maybe a little on the cheekbones, but for the most part, still sexy. But they're now scary sexy. Very scary sexy. They go to run out of the cave, and Kiefer gets caught in the sunlight. His hand ends up getting burned on the way out. They get to the car. The Frog Brothers, we don't ride with vampires. And then we do now. We're all going together. We have to get home. We only have said many of hours before sunset. We've got to fortify the place because as soon as they can, they're going to be coming directly for us. Awesome 80s montage right here.
Yeah.
Awesome 80s montage. Fill in the bathtub with holy water, garlic. Got squirt guns full of holy water, steaks carved out of all kinds of stuff. A lot of neat little Home Alone-y traps that we can use to...
I was just going to say, Home Alone stole from this, dude.
And all of them stole from... Well, maybe... No, I think Deadly... Have you ever seen Deadly Games?
I don't think so.
It was a French movie that was just recently rediscovered 3 or 4 years ago. Came out a few years before Home Alone, but imagine the Santa was actually trying to kill the kid.
Oh, nice.
But it's full on Home Alone, dude. It's 100%. The kid gets trapped Home Alone, builds all these trinkets or whatever all over it. Maybe they tried to bury it after Home Alone came out. It will pay you to put this at the way back of the vault so nobody finds it for a long time. It's on Shudder, though. It's a fun movie. So they're going to fortify the place. We get this awesome montage. Star's upstairs with Laddie, who's dressed like a little member of Queen. Like if Queen was made of kids, that's what Laddie looks like.
Totally, dude. You nailed that.
Looks like. So now they're getting ready, but Nanook tries to take off out the front. Mom is at dinner with her boss at his house. They take off. Nanook takes off down the front walkway. Sam goes running after him. Nanook, come back. And we hear these sounds that we've heard throughout that come down whenever the vampires are approaching. And we get these cool POV shots of them swerving and coming in. Michael comes running out, gets the leash off. They get into the house, blast the door shut. Very intense. Like, come on, come on, come on. Everybody's yelling. Blast the door shut. Now they're getting ready for the fight. People get into the house relatively quickly.
Yeah.
It's fast. And he's like, they even stake one of them. And he's like, you miss, sucker. You know? It's very, very 80s in that way. Garlic don't work on us. He's like, oh, how about holy water? Starts splashing it all over his face. Corey Haim, Sam gets one with a bow and arrow. That's what he tells him you miss because he shoots him with the bow.
Oh, yeah,
he's
yeah.
like, you miss, sucker. And he's like, not second time. Let's the second one go. Clearly pierces the heart right away. So we've got those two, which might have been, maybe there were only the three outside of David, or if it was five, but Laddie ends up turning, comes blasting up out of the bed. Like,
yeah, he's scary as fuck, dude.
Yeah, and she's like, no, you can't kill him. He's like, he's a fucking blood-sucking Eddie Munster. We got to kill this little... She's protecting. Star is very protective of Laddie. They get him under control because Laddie ends up living through the end of it. And we get the Michael and David showdown in the living room, which is cool because David's slashing from the shadows. He'll get a quick, like, whoosh, yeah, you know, and then be gone. And they're talking to each other like, I don't want to fight you, Michael. I want to make you one of us. You know, we could live forever, be immortal as teenagers. It'll be great.
I feel like there's a little bit of a little something going on, too. I feel like Kiefer likes him a little too much.
If Kiefer, you got to think, was around when that earthquake happened, when he said 19, you know, it's probably been a couple hundred years.
Right.
He's definitely doing it with all the dudes and all the ladies. Doesn't matter. All the sax mans. So Kiefer and Michael starts calling him out. Face me man to man. Let's do this. And they're both faced. Bangs everywhere and big eyes, cool hair that never gets messed up somehow on Jason Patrick, just always looks so good. They fight my turn back and forth, some cool wire work here where they're fighting in the air in the living room, and the living room is lit by just a fire, maybe a couple lamps. It's a really nice set design.
Yeah.
And he ends up blasting David onto an rack of antlers that Grandpa had. And this is where you get that. Thou shalt not fall. That song is so slow. We get this light as his spirit's kind of leaving his body and it's smoky and shit. Now everybody's back together. We're downstairs. Mom comes in with her old man. He looks around and is like, oh, shame, shame, shame. And you're like, wait, what? We've got our head vampire. So Michael is still strong enough to fight because he's still a vampire. But this dude is super strong. He's been the big bad the whole time and even tells him, Michael, he's got his mom and his brother, I think, by the throat. And he's like, I'll kill them both or we'll become one big happy family, the undead Brady Brunch or whatever. As he's getting ready to kill, they fight a little bit. Dun, 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 dun. Grandpa don't give a fuck. He shoots giant logs. He didn't know where any of his family was.
Nope.
He didn't know where anybody was. He shoots these giant stake logs that we had seen him putting in the ground for fence posts earlier in the movie. Straight through there. Straight through our homie. He's dead. The curse is lifted. Everybody who was a vampire is not a vampire anymore. Or if you're already dead, then that's on you. Sorry about your luck. Grandpa comes in through the dust and the smoke. He's got a fucking American Eagle bandana around his head, Carhartt jacket on. He looks great, goes to the fridge, opens it up, and she's like, Dad, Dad. He's like, drinking his milk. It's the one thing I never could stand about Santa Carla. All the damn vampires. Yes, dude.
Yeah.
Yes. That is amazing. And then we jump to a roll credits with another great soundtrack. You know, we didn't spend as much time with this one. I don't think we have to, only because it is iconic.
It is iconic. I think it's come back in a big way too. Like, I think that like it went away for a little bit in maybe the 2000s, but I think right now it's probably as popular as it ever was.
If not more, because everyone was like, Twilight Zombies fucking or vampires right, suck.
Right.
Show me cool teen vampires.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thou shall not sing.
And I don't think that they've done cool teen vampires again as well as they did in this.
Not like this, man. Because I feel like we don't capture... I'm trying to think of the 90s. That was all Anne Rice and Interview with the Vampire. That was serious vampires.
Yeah, but still sexy. Things,
right. Dracula, you had Wes Craven did his Dracula and Dracula 2000 or whatever it was. They sexy were kind of sexy.
Yeah.
But they weren't like this. The characters weren't as developed. I think you didn't have that young talent. Like if Scream had been made with vampires, it would have contended with the Lost Boys.
Yeah.
But you didn't put anything, I feel, that was quite an equal contender. Because me, out of sexy Kiefers, this is 5 out of 5. The Lost Boys is... It's a perfect movie.
It really is great. And I think I thought Kiefer was really sexy in Flatliners, but he's not as like, he's a little more of a victim in that one.
Right. Whereas in this one, the whole movie just oozes with like sexy vampire. It's hard to deny. And we do get some good prosthetic work near the end where you get to see more deformed faces, you know, the high cheekbones, the monster. And we didn't even touch on the slaughter scene at the with the surf Nazis, when that's a cool scene. You don't really see them killing people, but you see the blood all over their faces after, and they come up over that hill. Yeah. He's like, now you know what we are, Michael. Now you know what you are.
Yeah.
You gotta feed. Live forever, but you gotta feed. So yeah, how about you? Lost Boys, 1987.
Lost Boys, I'll give it a solid 4.5.
That's fair. Yeah.
4.5, Kiefer Sutherland's fucking sexy earrings.
I just think about, I'm going to start looking at it as, is it a time capsule movie? Is it something that, and this one, it is. I feel like if you were to put all the vampire movies, if I told you only pick 10 vampire movies, for sure this, Nosferatu, Interview with the Vampire, Dracula with Lugosi, probably a Christopher Lee, one of the Draculas, Blade, fucking Blade would have to be in there. That first Blade is so good, dude.
Yeah, dude, it's so off the hook.
All right, so 4.5 out of 5 sexy Kiefers. That's a good score, and it's one that I revisit often.
From Dusk Till Dawn, dude, has to be on that list. Come on,
that list has to be on that list. The 90s were a good time for vampires, late 80s, early 90s into the 90s.
Vampires have kind of gone away. The last good vampire thing, they did The Strain, and that was pretty cool.
I read all those books.
Yeah.
And I watched the first maybe season of the TV series. He did the Blade 2 vampires though, right? Guillermo del Toro did Blade 2?
Yeah, he did.
And that's where they had the bigger open mandibles, more like a predator type face, as opposed to traditional like blood, which is scary as fuck if something's whole head is going to open up and just like bite on your head.
Yeah, dude.
So yes, The Lost Boys, if you've never seen it, check it out. If you have seen it,
Watch it again.
It's a fun one. So let's get into our mindful part of the episode. And I just quick grabbed one of my notes. And this is something that we've talked about a few times. Anger. I know anger is something that you know well in your life. I think we all know and can know anger very well. You don't ever completely get rid of anything. But I had a note that was written with another word, but I just swapped out the word anger. And the note said, the original one said violence, but this says, if anger could solve anger, we would have solved it already. If violence could solve violence, we've had so many wars. If violence could solve violence, it would have solved itself so many times. You think that big fucking bomb would have been the one that's like, okay, let's stop doing this.
Yeah.
But if anger could solve anger, then we wouldn't have it. You know what I mean? Like if being angry in response to something or someone in your life solved the problem, but it never does. We carry it around with us for days and weeks and months and sometimes years to our grave. Yeah. We carry this bitter fucking black rock inside of us that just festers and eats away like a cancer of any kind of peace you might be able to have, because being angry about something never solves the problem.
Never.
That's it.
Yeah.
I don't know what
else to say. It's pretty profound. I mean,
I don't know what else to say because it never solves the problem. Look at, you know, your own life. All of our lives are not really that different. We all experience, I think, the same suffering, same anger, same joy, same happiness, different levels for sure. But, and anger in my experience has, looking back, reflecting on it, never solved a single solitary issue. Like, ooh, being pissed about that made it better.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It just eats you up inside slowly and forever. And, you know, but I don't have the answer to fix it. You seem to have found some tools to lighten the load a little bit.
Yeah. Try and get rid of the ego, because the ego is the one that wants to hold on to that stuff.
The ego is the one that wants you to be angry so that you will fight.
Yes. And I will say, a little tool like you were talking about, there are little tools. One of my favorite ones is a thought interruption. It works when you start having those really angry thoughts, even if it's been going on for like 30 minutes, days and shit. When you notice it, you're like, I'm sitting here festering in anger. Because you always hit that point, and then usually you feel like a piece of shit because you've been angry towards the people around you the entire time you were angry. You come crawling back like, fuck, I'm really sorry. I acted like a terrible asshole. It was not very nice of me to do. Right. But when you notice you're having angry thoughts, is to interrupt that thought with a kind or a peaceful thought towards whatever it is you're angry towards. And that is so anti-ego. That is the most anti-ego shit to do, because your ego is justified in your anger. You feel justified in the way you feel because your action made me feel this way, when in reality, you're feeling that way because you're choosing to feel that way. So if you can sever that and say, you know what? I wish that shit a bunch of peace, dude. I wish calm for that thing. I wish peace for that thing. And it is hard work to do, but it's the easiest work, and probably I should say it's hard and it's easy though, because you don't need anything to do it. Everything you need for it, you carry around with you 24/7. You could stop and be like, I'm just going to take one breath. I wish that person and this situation calm and well. And it might come back 2 minutes later. You do it again. You do it again. And then pretty soon that becomes the habit. That becomes the normal. The anger now feels out of place. The normal is the thought interruption, because you switch those two things out. You didn't eliminate the one, but you put a new habit in its place. And you're and it'll just pay you off in spades, because like we talked about, anger never really feels good. It might feel good in the heat of it.
Right.
You might feel justified
in it, but that's your ego.
That is your ego. Or if you know the world has beat you down so hard that your suffering is so great that the only way you can express that or feel anything is to project that out into the world, yeah, towards the people around you, you know, the things, your situation. If it wasn't for my fucking piece of shit job, I'd be so happy. If it wasn't for, oh, I can't go out and do anything because my fucking kids, I can't da 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 da. But if you can eliminate that and cut that shit off and just, yeah, because it doesn't feel good. I mean, I've never met anyone in my life, and I've met a lot of people all over this world who is a miserable fucking people just surrounded them, and they wanted to be around them all the time. Somebody who complains all the fucking time. The only people that want to be around that are other people who complain like that, because then it justifies the behavior of, you know, whatever it is, gossip or complaining, anything. But if you can cut that shit off, you can live whole lives in one day. It's cool. Anger doesn't help. It really doesn't help. Unless we talked about that one off chance that maybe somebody said something to you and you use that as a motivation to do something productive. But the moment it becomes truly productive, it's no longer anger. Mm-hmm. Now it's something, you know, creative. It's something that's coming out of that. You're creating a new thing that, even though the catalyst might have been anger, you know, it might be like being overweight, and that might be the catalyst to start at the gym. You know, so yeah, it might be something negative, but once it becomes a positive thing, once you start at the gym, that's no longer the negative thing. You're not in there anymore. You're not existing in the past.
Right.
You're in this new positive path forward.
But you don't have to let yourself be angry to make that decision either. You can come to it from a positive place, and it actually feels better. And you'll probably stick with it longer.
And it does. That was the biggest thing for me when I picked up breathing. That's a great observation, is I would only do my breathing exercises in the presence of anxiety or a panic attack.
Right.
Then I started doing them all the time. So it wasn't just in response to a negative. It was just something that I did. And then when the panic attack would pop up, it was like, oh, okay, now you just, but you are right. Yeah. 100%. Cool. Like, anything else you want to add?
It's like when you're hate fucking somebody and then it turns into this beautiful coming.
But that usually doesn't.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't know. You went off on me, but. No, I think the fact that you're coming from a place of hate, that's probably a pretty violent experience across the board. There are people, though, I think, you know, your suffering becomes so great that violence becomes, yeah, like, I want to feel pain, because that's the only thing that numbs down the suffering that I feel inside of me. And I wish I could just hug that shit out of everybody. But unfortunately, you got to figure that out on your own.
You could set up a hugging booth, dude, on the pier. In Santa
Cruz. I want to get a bunch of shirts that say free hugs upon request, so I can wear one every day of the week. Just a bunch of different colors.
Then on the back it just says over 18 only.
Hug a fucking kid. You can give anybody a hug. I want to hug a kid without their parents present, because you just I'm gonna punch you in the back of the head. Like, what are you doing to my kid?
Stop hugging my kid, you little freak.
Right. I just want to bring love into the world. No, yeah, but you got to start with yourself. It's got to start with yourself. When that you can't live with anger, it's like sitting in a shit pool.
Yeah,
like literally just festering in a shit pool, and you're like, I love it in this motherfucker.
Nothing good's gonna come out of that.
Nothing good's gonna come out of that. No. Drain your shit pool.
Drain your shit pool, and then give somebody a hug.
Right, and then because you don't want to smell like shit because you come with anger. And another, we'll talk about that next week. I'll save that one because I was looking at it right now. But we'll save that one. So, for our 21st episode,
we're all grown up.
Pop extravaganza. I got to peek into your meat wallet. It was beautiful. We talked about vampires.
Yeah, we did.
It was beautiful. We talked about beautiful vampires.
We talked about beautiful saxophone playing.
Such beautiful. I have a signed poster in my booth. If anybody wants to come get tattooed by me and see a signed thing that says to Joe Murrow, I still believe. And it's him playing that beautiful arched back, gold glistening in the firelight, greasy body, so much oil. I still believe.
I still believe.
Bye.